in opening this conversation up, you want to acknowledge anything they do for the relationship. You want to show appreciation. And it's not just that I'm noticing your faults. I'm also noticing that you do these things. And I want us to be a better team. And I know that we have it in us because we've done it and we've kind of fallen off because life's busy. So how can we approach this together in creating the partnership, family dynamic life that we want?
I'm Amy.
And I'm Abby. And as women, we are constantly comparing ourselves to others. But your life isn't supposed to look like hers. Being your best self means standing firm in your decisions and always being willing to grow with a purpose.
We get vulnerable and real with an honest look into the challenges and triumphs we all face. Every woman listening gets the opportunity to choose what life looks like for herself. Today on the podcast, we have Shayna from Love After Baby back on. If you've been listening for a while, she was on episode 170, and we talked all about keeping love in our partnerships after babies come into the picture. Shayna has had another baby, more marriage experience, and also become a Gottman Bringing Baby Home educator. So this is infused with so many tips on if you feel like your partnership isn't in a strong place, how to bring it back together, what to do if your partner isn't open to therapy. Like, there's a lot of good nuggets in here. So now on to the show.
So today we want to start off by diving into a challenge that we just know our community faces. So maybe it's in the baby years, maybe it's in the little kid years, maybe some of our community members have older kids and they're still facing it, but it's this idea that your partner starts to feel like your roommate. So instead of just your romantic partner, they're just kind of this person who's there. So in your practice, are you seeing that this is pretty common, or just help us out with this answer?
Yeah. So first of all, this is super common. And I also want to say that since the last time I was on this podcast, I've had my third baby. I believe I was pregnant last time we spoke. And I also got another certification as a Gottman Bringing Baby Home educator. So I've been able to learn so much in that time, both professionally and personally, because I was going through it again myself with certain things that I had, you know, navigated before and figured out. And that's something I want your listeners to know, that it's normal in our relationships that we're going to go through seasons where sometimes something that we feel like I've moved past this, I've learned how to navigate this, but now in this new season with these new challenges, we're re-experiencing it in a new way. And having a third child definitely forced us to, you know, learn how to navigate things differently in terms of time and connection. And I would say that our relationship is the best it's ever been, not in spite of having three kids, but because of having three kids, where you have to realize like what really matters in relationships. When you don't have all the time in the world, you focus on what really does matter. And this shift that happens in relationships with parents in the early years is super common and not talked about enough. I've been talking about it now for, I think, over 4 years. And there are a lot more people talking about it on Instagram and like on Facebook and everywhere, but it's still a challenge that parents face and can feel alone in and feel like there's something wrong with them, since not all their friends in their friend group are necessarily talking about it. So it's not that there's something wrong with the couple. It's completely normal when you think about adding children into the mix of the relationship dynamics. Suddenly your focus shifts to them, their needs, their schedules, their well-being. And that can lead to you neglecting your relationship somewhat, because here you have this full-grown adult who's not totally dependent on you, and you have these little children who are completely dependent on you, sometimes more than others. So you end up not having as much emotional bandwidth or even energy to give to your relationship. It's not even about the time, right? Like, you know, the people say, like, if you have time to watch Netflix, you have time to do this. And yes, in theory, you have time. But sometimes we don't have the emotional bandwidth or the energy after the end of a long day. We might feel, you know, exhausted, burnt out, touched out, whatever it is, all these things. And so we start feeling disconnected because we're putting all our energy into the children. And while this is super common, acknowledging it is the first step towards making positive changes and figuring out how you can move past this stage.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I know a lot of our listeners have described it as like one more ask. If your partner is trying to connect with you, you feel like there's something being asked of you. Now, I think what couples struggle with is like, how do you tell the difference between if there's something in the relationship that's a long-term issue that really needs to be cared for and fixed versus just like a common dry spell where they're just in a little bit of a funk because of the stage of life they're in.
Right. And like I said, it's super common, right? We feel needed out. This just happens. So it's going to happen at some points, most likely for everybody who has kids. What I want you to focus on to think about is this something that's seasonal, situational, or is this something that's a more long-term issue? Which, even if it is seasonal, situational, you still want to address it. But when is it more critical or you might need more addressing? There's five things I want you to think about. I want you to think about the duration. How long has this been going on? Has it, been with, the last few days, the last few weeks, even the last couple months? If you've just had a baby, or let's say you've just moved or just had a major life event. So time-wise, how long has this been going on? Is it like your oldest is already 5, 6, 7, and it's been 7 years? Or is it just been, seasonal right now? How's your communication? Are you able to communicate about what's going on? Are you able to like check in with each other? Or is the second you bring up something that's somewhat vulnerable or emotional, it's seen as attacking or it's shut down or leads to fighting and, accusations, things like that? What's the emotional connection like? You might feel disconnected and like you're not having time for each other, but you might still have that feeling of love and respect and fondness, admiration towards your partner, as opposed to like, in your head doing an eye roll every time they walk in the room or feeling resentful. So, what is that emotional connection feeling like overall? What is the willingness to work on the relationship? So, if you're able to have these conversations and like, hey, we're in this funk, we're in this situation, but you're able to view it as, okay, how can we tackle this? We're a team versus one of you is like, there's nothing wrong, or I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm not getting involved, and that's, pointing to a larger issue that might be going on. And what's your impact? What's the impact of this funk on your daily life? So if it's a short-term thing, it's not going to have a big impact on your quality of life and how you're feeling overall, what your relationship feels like overall. It's, a blip in the road, whatever. But if it's long-term, it's going to start affecting your mental health, how you feel about your family life, how you feel about, marriage and all these different things. And it's not just going to affect how you feel about your relationship. It's going to, sometimes leads to an existential crisis at times. So if you think about these five things, again, that's the duration, your communication, emotional connection, willingness to work on the relationship, and the impact on daily life. Those five things can help you gauge, like, hey, is this a seasonal situational funk? Or, is this a long-term issue that needs more attention.
Well, Shane, I'm so glad that you laid that out for our audience. And just even thinking back to different parts of our marriage and our relationship of where we could have asked those questions and would have been a lot better than like nagging or venting to our friends without actually trying to seek any type of solution. And I know I've been there before. I know people in our community have also been there. So those five things, it just makes it so much easier to figure out, okay, do we need to do something right now? What can we do in the short term? But then also in the long term, what can we do together as a couple? Because we got married, we're in this relationship, we might have kids, and we want to make sure that we are moving the same direction and not moving further and further apart. I also know when these situations happen, a lot of the women in our community, I've also felt this way. We feel like we're the ones that are kind of taking ownership of making sure that we're, doing the therapy, if we're doing the therapy or reading the books, we're seeking the knowledge, and we want our partners to be able to stand up and do the same. So how can we get more leadership from our partners in these situations without, the nagging that can happen or making the problem worse?
So a lot of times, aside from not wanting to be nagging, a lot of moms might say to me, why do I have to be the one to always start this conversation? Why is this my responsibility? And yes, it's frustrating, but in life, we have different battles, right? We learn with our kids, choose your battles. If your kid wants to go like jump off a cliff, you're not going to let that. But if they want to wear a really ugly outfit to school one day that you don't like, I don't know if I should use the word ugly, but just, you know, not your style, not your aesthetic, and your kid just, you know, wants to rock this. I feel like with your first kid and early on, you're a lot more adamant, like, no, you will not wear this. And then as you, your kids get older, depending what your experience has been in your own families before that, you're like, just let them, you know, express themselves, or like the teacher knows that kids do this. It's not a reflection of me or me not getting my child normal looking clothes. This is my kid expressing themselves in a certain way. So we learn to pick our battles, right? So here in this case, you might have to make the first move in opening that conversation if this is something you want. If this is a change you want to see and it's not happening, one of you has to start the conversation. We don't want to be like, you know, Dr. Seuss, the North going Zach and the South going Zach, and neither one wants to go north or west, south, east or west. You don't want that to be your relationship. Like, I've had times in my own relationship where I'll ask my husband to do something and he doesn't do it like the second I want, because he's doing something that I don't deem important, but he's enjoying or whatever. And then sometimes the thought will cross my head of, okay, so next time he asks me, I'm not going to do it immediately either. And then I catch myself and I'm like, is that the type of relationship I want? Is that the dynamic I want? Because the reality is, there are times when he does jump up and do things for me. And there are times where I don't want to jump up and do something he asked either, and I don't. So there's going to be times where that happens, but we don't want it to be with intent of, I'm not doing this or I'm going to do this. If that happens where, you know, one of you acts out in this way, in this type of dynamic, it's okay if it happens. And it's the idea is that you want it to be a minority of the time. When you start making calculations of, I'm not going to do this or I am going to do this, as opposed to it being just a situational thing, that's where we're getting into, like, you know, dangerous territory. So back to this, we want to have an open dialogue with a softened startup. We spoke about that on our last podcast episode, and it was a popular one. But just quickly, a softened startup is starting with the I feel, stating the problem in a neutral way, and then expressing your need clearly. So in opening this conversation up, you want to acknowledge anything they do for the relationship. You want to show appreciation. And it's not just that I'm noticing your faults. I'm also noticing that you do these things. And I want us to be a better team. And I know that we have it in us because we've done it and we've kind of fallen off because life's busy. So how can we approach this together in creating the partnership, family dynamic life that we want? And saying this as, you know, me and you together doing this, it's not me lecturing you and saying, here, these are the things you need to do. So you're, you know, first of all, not lecturing them. And then you're also helping them take accountability too when you do that, because you're saying, like, let's do this together. Then you have to, you know, state your needs clearly, because they don't necessarily know what you're wanting out of this. You know, if you just have this general conversation of, hey, I really want to work on a relationship, great. But what does that look like? Because what that looks like to you might be different than how that looks to your partner. So if to you, let's say, feeling more loved would be them putting an effort of planning a date night, tell them that. If it would be having more meaningful conversations and not, let's say, going on your phone certain times, tell them that. Figure out this game plan together, and at least at the start, have check-ins once a week or so to check in with how it's going. So you don't have to long-term all the time be like, hey, so how are we doing with this? How are we doing with this? It is good to have occasional ones. You know, in the beginning, it's important to be intentional about having it very regularly. My husband and I, with the season we're in our relationship, we're at the point where, let's say, birthdays or anniversaries or these different moments of reflection are times for us to think about, like, okay, what's been working really well? What changed? Like, what's different from where we were last year to this year that we appreciate? And, you know, what are things that we might need to work on more? So we have those, like, dates in the calendar that are arbitrary dates, but they give us time to reflect. Since we don't need as much those, like, weekly check-ins in that very formal way, it's more organic. But those, you know, dates on the calendar give us an opportunity to reflect more in depth of where we've been. And, you know, having those regular check-ins early on can really keep you accountable to each other, and it will keep it top of mind since it's not so much of a habit yet for you to do these things. And remember that there's going to be times where one of you will have more capacity than the other to be invested in the relationship, in the home, in general, different things. So be open about that and be, you know, realize that and accept that. And if you're noticing that it's one of you who's always having the more capacity, or like 99% of the time having more capacity, then that might be something to address, seeing, you know, if they're not, you know, taking care of different mental health or physical health needs, and that's what's leading to it. But notice that it's okay for one of you to be putting in more from time to time than the other, but you just don't want it to be imbalanced completely most of the time.
Yeah, Drew and I, we really love every year near our anniversary, we talk about how our year went, what we could have done better, what we did well. And doing that for the past few years, I can tell you there's years where we really felt like we nailed it, and years that were tougher. And we, you know, we knew that we needed to improve in certain areas.
Okay, here's Self Community. Let's take a break from this episode to bring up a brand new partner, which is Vivo Barefoot. So these are the ultimate barefoot training all-arounder. So think shoes for weight and strength training, calisthenics, CrossFit, HIIT types of workouts. Amy and I both got ourselves a pair, and we love them. Studies show that foot strength increases by 60% in a matter of months just by walking around in them. So I tried out the Modus Strength and the Primus Asana 3 and love both of them. And what I can tell you is that these shoes just feel so good. Your toes aren't crammed. They still have that nice sole, so you don't feel like you're walking around on eggshells. They feel so good while staying secure. What's also great about Vivo in comparison to other barefoot types of brands is that they have a 100-day trial to all your orders, 100 days. So give them a try. And if you change your mind within that period, they're going to be happy to return those shoes for you. No hassle. So a funny thing about me, I actually love being barefoot. However, I've noticed my feet have started to ache a little bit, especially the arches of my feet. So by using these, I'm hopeful that my feet can become stronger and they can really help plant your feet better while they gain strength. So give Barefoot a try and go to vivobarefoot.com and use code HERSELF for 25% off your first order. So again, that's Vivo Barefoot, V-I-V-O, barefoot.com for 20% off your first order with code HERSELF. Okay, back to the show.
So speaking of that, what we've heard from our community is a lot of people can get stuck feeling like roommates. I think especially when you have young kids or kids that are in sports and you're basically like shuffling your family around and you're super busy and most of the conversation is about what the kids need. Do you have any tangible tips about how people can get out of that phase where it really feels like they've lost that connection and intimacy?
Yeah, and really my best suggestion for this is making Gottman's 6 magic hours a habit in your relationship. And I think we touched on this in the last episode also, but in reflecting on my own relationship recently, I had my birthday and our anniversary. And I was, you know, thinking about it, and we've really made these in the last year more than ever. I've always been doing some of them and, you know, not all of them all at the same time, depending on what's going on in our lives. And they've really all become habits. And I appreciate so much the work that I do because it allows me to be a better wife and a better mom and a better person. Because when I'm working with clients and when I'm talking on, you know, podcasts or whatever, it makes me reflect on, am I doing this in my own relationship? Am I not? And there have been times where I'm like, am I a fraud that I talk about this and I, you know, am not doing this or I'm not great at this? And I've even asked that to my husband sometimes, like after we've had an argument or something. And he said, no, you're human. Like any of these gurus are, you know, any of these gurus, they who we see and like learn from, they have their moments where they don't practice what they preach, not because it's intentional, but because we're human and we make mistakes. And what I teach, you know, people in my audience, clients, is that it's not about always being perfect. It's about being intentional when you can. And when you do have conflict, repairing it and repairing it quickly. And that when you have conflict, to do so in a respectful manner. And that's something that I've, you know, really, really mastered, I would say, in the last year more than ever. And it really transforms your relationship in just from little things. And so it's made me even more passionate about sharing my message. So back to those six magic hours, and I'm not necessarily going in any specific order, and I'm not telling it in terms of quantity of times the way the magic hours are. It's just when I was thinking about the habits that lead to getting out of this, I'm like, oh, these fall under the magic 6 hours. So one of them is to prioritize date night. No matter how busy you are, once a week, make time for the two of you to connect. And as I've said many times, including on the last podcast, it doesn't have to be you know, going out for the night, going somewhere. It could just be at home. It could be something simple. It could just be putting your phones away and sitting together over dinner while the kids are sleeping, or having a drink together, or even watching a show that the two of you like together and, like, you know, chatting about it and chatting about, like, what's going on, what do you think is going to happen, laughing together. It's a really, can be a really connecting experience. So what makes it a date night is that it's intentional and meaningful, but it doesn't have to be anything grand or elaborate. And it's okay if from time to time, there's going to be a week where you don't have a date night. Like, there's been, like, in the last 2 months, I've traveled like 4 times. And so there were some weeks where we didn't necessarily have an intentional date night, but because day to day we are connecting and most of the time we do it, it didn't affect us negatively because it was, you know, for a brief week that, like, or a week here or there, that we didn't have that intentional date night, but we had so much connection built into our other days and in our day-to-day lives that it didn't make as much of a difference. So just being intentional about that. And over time, as these connection things become part of habit for your life, in the seasons where, or in the weeks where you don't have the time to have an intentional date night, you will still feel connected and in love. And then another one is having this daily check-in, which in the six magic hours, it would constitute the reunion, where at the end of the day, you see how your day was, you know, anything stressful that day, talking about what was important to them that day, different things that were going on, et cetera. And when you are talking, to practice active listening. So, you know, when you're having a conversation with somebody, I'm sure everybody can think of somebody who, when they're talking to them, they're giving them eye contact, they're nodding, they're like, mm-hmm. It encourages you to continue talking and feel like you're being listened to. Whereas when you're talking to somebody and they're staring at their phone, that's one of the worst feelings. And then a step above that, even if they're not staring at their phone, but they're kind of staring blankly, they're not nodding their head at all, they're not reacting at all, there's like a blank face, no reactions. It also makes you feel like, are they hearing me? Are they listening to me? So you don't want your partner to feel that way when they're talking to you, and vice versa. So this is something that you have to work on to become a habit. And, you know, when you're training to become a therapist, this is one of, like, the foundational skills we're taught in the beginning, is practicing this active listening. Because when you're in a therapy session and your therapist is just staring at you blankly or not feel making you feel encouraged to continue talking, it's not going to work out so well. So that's the active listening. Then expressing appreciation regularly, you know, telling them thank you, noticing things they do. It makes us feel acknowledged. It makes us feel seen. It makes the hard work that we do feel a little better, I guess, like when somebody notices it, right? Certain things that we don't like doing, whether it's unloading the dishwasher, sweeping the floor, making the beds, putting away the laundry, most of us don't love doing those things. I have a friend who says she loves doing dishes. I think it's a calming experience for her, but I don't know that that's the usual for most people. So these different things that we don't like to do, when somebody says thank you, it makes it feel like less of a burden or less annoying, or when it's acknowledged. So expressing appreciation, incorporating affectionate touch into your daily interactions. So that's, like, you know, before the two of you start your days, like giving a goodbye hug and kiss. When you get back in the day, giving a hug, you know, holding their hand, sitting next to them on the couch while you're watching a TV show together, and, like, you know, snuggling your head into them. And it doesn't have to be sex. It could just be, you know, affectionate touch. And then working on your communication. So this leads into a lot of the stuff that we've already spoken about: expressing appreciation, soften startups, active listening, conflict resolution. And, you know, if you see that you're having a hard time incorporating these things on your own, you can always seek professional help or, you know, check out some resources to hold you accountable. And another thing was having tech-free zones and times. So, you know, I think about when I'm with people who are important to me in my life, typically I try to put my phone down, right? Back to what I was saying of looking at your phone. My husband, I live with. So it's not practical for me to say whenever I'm with him, I'm not going to be on my phone, because there's many times where, and I'm sure, you know, many of you can relate to this, like suddenly you remember that you need to order that thing in your Amazon cart, or you didn't put through the Target order for delivery, or you need to text their teacher about something, or you forgot to respond to a message earlier in the day and you don't want to forget again because it just popped in your head. And if you don't do it in this moment, you know that it might be 3 weeks till you open that person's message again. So, you know, you have to be realistic that you live with this person. You can't always be off your phone when you're with them, but having, you know, times or zones where it's tech free. So like at the dinner table, you don't have your phones out, unless, let's say, there's something very specific that day, then you can make an exception to the rule. But in general, let's say don't have phones when you're eating dinner together, or don't be on your phone when you're watching a show together. When you're out for the night, if you do go a date night out and you have a babysitter, like one of you keep your phone on the table, I guess, if that's the person who, you can get really like sophisticated with this and make it only ring when the babysitter calls or whatever. But if you don't want to do that, you can have it out. And then if you notice a text come up, quickly glance. If it's not the babysitter, don't even give it a second look. So having these rules makes the person feel like respected and appreciated, and they're important to you. And yeah, so that's overall. I know that's a lot of stuff, but I guess a quick recap is date night, appreciation, active listening, communication, affectionate touch, checking in with each other, seeing how your days were, saying goodbye in a, you know, intentional way, and having these tech-free times and zones.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It can feel like a lot for somebody who maybe is just starting off and they don't know which one to go in with, but even just choosing one to get started off with, and then conquering that, feeling good about it, feeling confident with it, and then moving on to the next one. But I actually want to talk about two of them together right now, because what we see and what we hear a lot of is that women need to feel seen, appreciated, and loved in order to be intimate with their partner, while men many times need intimacy to feel seen, appreciated, and loved. And this can really be, you know, quite the standoff. I mean, even just last night, Colin and I had a conversation. I had to pick up a kid early from daycare, and he gave me just the thumbs up when I sent him the text message. And I, like, right when we got home, I'm like, Colin, like, that really made me mad. Like, I had to stop my day early. I had to go over there and pick him up. If you would have been like, thank you so much, I wouldn't have minded picking him up. It's just as simple as that, instead of a thumbs up sign. So just with all of this, how do you coach couples through this, if there's that standoff between intimacy and then also feeling seen, appreciated, and loved?
Yeah. So back to before what you said, I just want to say one thing I often recommend to couples is choosing one thing to focus on for a week. At the end of the week, seeing how it's going for you, if you feel like it's becoming more of a habit, if not, give it another week or two, and then choose a second one. And you'll find sometimes that you build on them. You know, I know when you're focusing on health goals, and you start, let's say, exercising more, naturally you start drinking water more, then you naturally like start being a little bit more aware of eating things that are going to give you, you know, energy and good nutrition, because you're kind of in that mode. So a lot of times these things feed into each other. And then back to this. So it's important to have understanding and empathy on both partner sides to start to bridge this gap. And the first thing that I do is help them understand the cyclical nature of the dynamic. So, you know, if you don't do this, then they don't do this. But if they don't do this, then you don't feel this. And, you know, it's a cycle that can just be a negative one. So one of you is going to have to stop it, or hopefully both of you. But if it is important to you and it's not happening, this goes back to, you know, when we want to make changes in the relationship and the woman feels like the one who's starting, it might have to be you to start if this is something that's really important to you. And your relationship, it is important and it is worth it, right? How much energy do we put into so many different things in our lives that doesn't feel fun always, isn't always enjoyable, but the outcome is so worth it? So you don't want this to be your relationship constantly feeling like a chore, but relationships take work. And so if you need to put in a little bit more effort at times and to start conversations, then if that leads to you having a beautiful, loving, happy relationship, isn't that worth it? Like, if you knew that that would be the result, it is so worth it. So we start by figuring out, educating how, look at this dynamic, and they can understand it from that objective point of view of like, hey, I can see how that happens. Then we talk about the communication aspect, like have conversations about it, talk about what you need in the relationship, talk about how you like, what does, you know, feeling seen and appreciated look like to you? And they might say, hey, I needed you to say thank you when I told you I was doing something, as opposed to just giving me a thumbs up. And that would make a big difference. And now that you told him that, ideally going forward, next time something like that happens, he's going to be more intentional to, instead of just giving you a thumbs up, say, thanks so much. I know that's probably a real inconvenience to you. And that makes you feel a little better about it. You know, you're still doing the same thing. It's just the words that change. So, you know, when we communicate about that, and now this person knows that, ideally they're going to change going forward. And something that is important to remember whenever you're working on change is that our habits are ingrained in our brains, like these pathways. And when we're not being cognizant and intentional, we're going to revert back to our norm, especially in busy seasons. So if you are both being intentional to try to do things differently, and then now one of you or both of you slides back to doing something you used to do, that doesn't mean like, hey, they don't care, they stopped caring, or this obviously wasn't so important to them. This means like, hey, this is time for a check-in to talk about. And this is why I said, especially in the beginning stages, when you're working on making these things habit in your relationship, it's valuable to have these weekly check-ins, because then you have an opportunity to nip it in the bud if you're falling off track before it becomes a regular thing. Then once we talk about the communication aspect of couples talking about what they need in the relationship, what they need to feel loved or feel connected, then I encourage them to have non-sexual intimacy, right? So the woman doesn't want to draw, like jump straight into sex, where for men, you know, physical touch and all that for a lot of them can make them feel more connected. Although there are men who do need more of an emotional connection than others, because there's not one size fits all in relationships and how these things work. But as a whole, there's been the descriptor of like, men are like microwaves, women are like ovens. So men can, you know, have a very quick start. Women need, you know, the foreplay, which everything is foreplay, so to speak. It's not just about, you know, foreplay in the bedroom. It's how you talk to each other, the things you do for each other. You know, when your partner is unloading the dishwasher for you or cleans up the dinner table because they know you're going to lay with the kids and you're too tired to do that when you come out, and they are acting as, you know, it's not your job versus my job or a team. These are things going on in our home and we both tackle it together because it's both of our responsibility, then you have a much higher threshold for wanting to, you know, engage in something else that's going to take something from you. And it might not even feel like it's something that's being taken from you. It will start to become something that you want to feel connected as well. So it only helps both of you if you both start thinking in this way. And having the, you know, intimacy in this way is, you know, having conversations, having, you know, different kinds of affectionate touch, being there for one another, emotional support, all of these things can be so helpful. And then if your partner, we just spoke about all the things that your partner can do to make you feel seen and appreciated, but we said, you know, they need that physical intimacy more. So maybe in the beginning, and not if this doesn't feel right to you, because I don't ever want people to feel forced to do something, but if it is something you want to do and you're just not like finding the time, then schedule time for sex. For, you know, for a lot of busy people in busy seasons, it's not that they don't want to, it's that it just doesn't happen organically. And there is this thing among sex researchers that sex begets sex. So once you start scheduling it in and making it a priority, you will then suddenly find opportunities more organically than you did before. And then maybe you won't be in the pattern anymore of needing to schedule it. And then if you see you fall back into a very busy season, then you can, you know, start scheduling again if you need to. So this is a way for you to both, you know, mentally and emotionally get your needs met and have a meaningful and satisfying relationship and intimate life with each other.
That was all so interesting. And now a quick break from our sponsor, BetterHelp. You know, life can come at you very fast. There are challenges that we are all going to go through. Sometimes you just have this feeling like you need someone to help you work through something. That's exactly what my BetterHelp therapist did for me. She came into my life at a time where I really needed someone outside of it to help me through some things that I was working through. I was so thankful to spend an entire year with her. I felt like it really helped to get me back on track. So I know some of you are probably in a really tough season right now, and maybe you've also been thinking of talking to someone. Could be the year to prioritize your mental health. With BetterHelp, you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/herself. That's better, HELP.com/herself for 10% off your first month.
Let's pause this episode to bring up our podcast partner, Thorne Supplements. As you know, at this point, Amy and I love health and wellness. It's something that is so close to our heart, and we are always working to figure out what's going to work best for our body. And both Amy and I, we use Thorne. So a small story here. I had been using a different vitamin D drop for about 2 years, and I kept on getting retested and kept getting retested, and my body was not absorbing the vitamin D. I ended up switching to a new doctor in this process, and he recommended the Thorne products. And just a few drops under my tongue of a liquid vitamin D through Thorne, and my body started absorbing them. At the very next appointment a few months later, I was in the normal range. So from that point on, I switched to many of the Thorne products because I know that they have an unparalleled commitment to quality throughout the entire manufacturing process. And right now, if you go to Thorne, that's Thorne.com/you/herself, you can earn 20% off your nutritional supplement purchases. Again, that's thorne.com/u/herself to see the nutritional supplements that both Amy and I take and recommend. Okay, let's get back to our show.
And something else that we saw on your Instagram that we've actually talked about a lot is this quote, and it says, "It's not a lack of love, but a lack of friendship that makes unhappy marriages." And in that post, you talked about some research from the Gottman Institute. So I wanted you to kind of talk about this with our audience.
Yeah. So the specific research that I was referring to in that post was that the Gottmans have this workshop that's 2 days. And one day they talk about reducing conflict, and one day they talk about improving friendship. And they were curious if people were only able to attend one of these 2 days, which one would have better results. And a year later, they followed up with the couples, and the group that had only the friendship workshop was doing much better. And in their research overall, they found that friendship plays a critical role in having a happy, healthy marriage. And there's so many reasons for that. And back to what I was saying before, where I had my birthday recently and my husband and I were, you know, using it as an opportunity to reflect. We were out having lunch and he said to me, you know, in the past year is the first time that I would really call you my best friend. And, you know, there's no coincidence that I feel that we've had our best relationship in the past year with him saying that. And even though that can sound like cheesy and cringe, but when we think about the way that we treat our friends versus how we treat people who are in our everyday life that we sometimes take for granted, we can understand why when your partner is also your friend, your relationship is so much better. You know, I was with a friend for lunch in the summer and we were having lunch by a cafe that was on the water. And the way that we were sitting, she had a better view of the water than I did. And at a certain point, she's like, there's so many people out boating today. And then I turned and I'm like, I didn't even notice the boats till now. I was like, so, you know, in our conversation that I kind of saw the water at the corner of my eye, but I never saw all the people boating. And she's like, I wish that would be like when my husband and I were having lunch together, that like he wouldn't notice that either, because you're so present here. So I said, just to, not to start making this about your relationship, but because I'm only seeing you once a week at most, I'm able to be this present and focused. Whereas, your husband partner lives with you. And so then they have to be intentional, because you can't be that present and focused all the time. I mean, you can be very present, but there's other pressing things going on in your lives. So I remember even before my wedding, my husband said to me that a friend shared with him, choose one moment to like really hone in on the moment in your wedding to remember it forever, because you have so much going on, you're not going to remember it all. And I really, that was such a helpful like tip, because I have a very specific moment in my head that I can picture and bring such happy memories to me. And it's hard to be always fully on and present in your daily life when you have all these different things you need to do. So with friends, it's easier than it is with our partners, because our partner we view as a part of us, and we sometimes take them for granted. So if we were to treat them like a friend, think about how we view our friends, right? Think about friendship, and think about the two of you. You genuinely enjoy each other's company. You know each other's likes and dislikes. You know each other's life dreams. You talk about them. You respect each other. You don't always have to agree on everything. And, because when you disagree with your friend, you're able to view it as like, okay, we can agree to disagree, or we have different opinions. Whereas when our partner has a different opinion than us, it kind of feels like an attack, because they're a part of us and they should see things the same way as us. Or at least, we think that in our heads. Or, if, Abby or Amy, if one of you thinks, raise my children this way, or I do this with my kids, and the other one of you is like, no, but I do this with my kids, but you're okay, like accept, accepting each other, that each of you does these different things. But when it comes to you and your partner, if you have different views on how you do things with kids, like you guys got the same kids, you have to get on the same page of how you're going to do things. And so it's a different dynamic than with friends. But if you can navigate that disagreement or, difference of opinion with respect, the way you would with a friend, and not make it about like, oh my God, I can't believe you think this way, but like, why do you think differently? And here's why I think this way. And how can we get on the same page, since, we're doing this together? Then when you have that friendship, you navigate the ups and downs and conflicts and challenges of your relationship with a lot more empathy, understanding, care, togetherness, than if you're viewing it as, a me versus you, or you're supposed to be exactly like me.
Yeah, that definitely hits. I mean, when you have the same kids, it's like you gotta agree on some of those things. Otherwise, it can be very difficult. We always talk about how different we grew up in, like Colin's family versus my family that we grew up in, and somehow we can co-parent together, but it's not always easy. I do want to talk about something there with our partner, since we're on this topic right now, and that's the idea of if our partner is really struggling mentally and how much it can, hurt the relationship. It can feel like there's this big cloud over not only them, but our relationship and our entire family. So first things first, what can we do if we're both struggling mentally? And then how can we also support each other if neither of us are feeling our best in a relationship?
Yeah. So first of all, start with open communication. This is something that like I'm going to sound like a, like I'm on a repeat, that communication makes the biggest difference in relationships. So when you communicate about what you're experiencing, set realistic expectations of how you can be there for one another. Know that you're not going to be at full capacity, but come up with a plan of like what is okay and what isn't okay. I understand you're not doing well, but you still need to get up to take the kids to school. Or I'm not in the best place, but I will still make sure that there is dinner on the table every night. Like you can't just both fall apart. So if you're both struggling, come up with when one only one of you is struggling, you're able to like one of you pick up the slack a little bit more. But if you're both struggling, come to an agreement with each other of what is expected, so that life is, still sustainable for the family. Then be compassionate to each other's needs. Talk about, what ways you can each practice self-care and how you can each give each other space to do that. So for one of you, it's like a walk in the morning, then the other one makes sure to be available to watch the kids while that one goes on a walk. Or if it's, you know, doing a bike ride at night, the other one's like, okay, you go do your bike ride once the kids are asleep, or while the kids are in the bath, or whatever it is, you know, figuring out those ways where you can give each other space to do the things that are giving them self-care and enhancing their well-being. And also taking care of your mental health. So if one or both of you needs to go to therapy, either individually or as a couple, figuring out a plan for that, and having these ways that you can support each other within the capacity that you have. So like I said, like certain times, certain activities, whatever it is, leaning into your support networks that you have outside of each other, since, you know, when the other person, like I said, isn't struggling as well, you can lean into them a lot more. But if they're struggling and they can't give you that support that you need right now, then leaning into other supports, whether that's family, friends, therapy, you know, different social networks, religious circles, if you're part of any community like that. So leaning into the other supports you have, doing activities that boost your mood together. So whether that's doing exercise together, which, you know, creates endorphins and makes you happy, back to Legally Blonde. And if, you know, watch a comedy, get yourself laughing, just little things that can boost your, you know, serotonin, dopamine, different things like that. Practicing gratitude together. There are so many studies that show how practicing gratitude regularly switches our brain to be more grateful and to notice more positive things. So doing it together can be really helpful. Like talking about like, hey, you know, we're both going through a really rough time, but these are the things that are going well. Instead of focusing mainly on the negative things that are maybe going on, giving attention to the positive things that are going on, and then you will start to notice more of those. Noticing positives in your family, noticing positives in your relationship. Like say like, hey, we've really been able to support each other, or thank God our kids are healthy, or, you know, thankfully we're able to pay all our bills. Like noticing things that are going well that you can do so that you're not just, you know, struggling, because you are struggling now, but we don't want it to be only struggling. Then celebrating small wins, like when something does go well, acknowledging that, noticing that, setting boundaries of what you're going to like do or say, noticing what each other's triggers are. So when you have these clear boundaries of, okay, I understand you're not doing well, but you cannot say this to me, you cannot do this to me, then when you have those boundaries, you'll have less resentment and you'll feel more supported. So that's most of it. And, you know, again, if you're both struggling and you're trying all these things, you're trying, you know, self-help books, you know, different forums, and it's still not working out quite well, then get therapy. Individual, couple, those are going to serve you differently. Individual therapy is going to help each of you cope with your own struggles. If you go to couples therapy, then you will, you know, be able to get tools to help each other navigate each other's struggles and how you can, you know, work as a team to feel a little better and navigate different challenges that come up.
Yeah, I think where it gets really hard, and we've heard this a lot, I've experienced it myself, is in a heterosexual relationship, if the woman is struggling, it seems like she's more open to figuring out how to get herself help. You know, I've been really open. I had a really hard time after our third child. My parents were getting divorced, and it was during a pandemic. So I went to therapy for a year. Shout out to Kristen. It was really helpful to give me tools to figure out how to help myself. Drew's had points in his life, he's been on here, where he's struggling and he's not open to therapy really. So what do you say to the women that are like, yes, that's a great answer, my partner does not seem open to self-help books, therapy, the things that we feel like would help him?
Yeah. I mean, you can't force anyone to go to therapy. That's never going to work out well. I actually had a client once who was sort of forced to go to therapy, and it did not go well. And I made sure that I will never do that again. I will not, you know, it was, you know, somebody like that, their school made them go to therapy, and the parents thought I was the best fit. And I was like, nope, this is not ever happening again, because it just doesn't go well when somebody is forced. Some people don't mind, trying to navigate that, but it's tricky. So we want to normalize mental health conversations, whether that's, talking about, different things we've seen in the news, sharing an article, sharing a podcast. There's so many podcasts now that are not like actually therapy, but they are great about mindset, and those can be helpful. And sometimes when we focus on the mindset aspect, it is received better than when we say therapy or mental health. But also, we want to normalize these mental health conversations, because a large part of them not wanting to go to therapy is because of the stigma. And leading by example, right? So talking about your own therapy experiences in a positive way, using positive language around it, offering that if they do want to go through this, down this road, you can help them find a therapist, figure out the right fit, show them that it is strong to get help. It's not a sign of weakness. Emphasizing how it will impact your relationship and the family as a whole if they get help with whatever is going on. And, again, like the more you talk positively about how therapy has affected you, and they start seeing that and they start hearing that, they're like, I've noticed a positive change here. Maybe I should check this stuff out. And, giving them different options, whether that's a support group, an online forum, different things like that. Sometimes, I've noticed with a lot of people who are hesitant to go to therapy that doing online therapy, I mean, now online therapy is the regular thing because of COVID, but before COVID, I did online therapy 4 days a week, and I had a lot of people who had anxiety about either going to therapy, like, going outside of their home for this, like people seeing them walk in the office, and being able to be in their own comfortable space and get on a computer or a phone and talk to their therapist just made them feel a lot more comfortable. So there are these online options that might make them feel a little bit more comfortable. And, emphasizing how it is confidential and private, like the person can lose their license if they ever share anything that was divulged to them in the therapy session. So all of that, and two books that could be great to recommend. One is The Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which isn't directly like therapy, mental health related. It's about Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. And he talks about how whatever struggle you're going through in life, when you have your meaning, it gives you a drive to keep going and like figure out how to keep moving on. And it's such a powerful message. It's a bestseller. So they might be, be able to get something out of it reading it, and like suggest the book as a great read as opposed to it being about mental health. And then Lewis House of the School of Greatness podcast has a book called The Mask of Masculinity, where he talks about, having to get over his own, beliefs that he had around certain things when he was struggling with, different mental health and life situations. So doing that and being patient, supportive, and hopefully they will be open to getting the help they need.
And that's so helpful, because we know it can feel really heavy if your partner is going through something tough, and it's not great for them. It's not great for your family. It's not good for your relationship. But this entire conversation, Shana, we have loved having you on again. And if you loved more of her, go back to episode 170, because we have even more of Shana on that episode. But let our audience know where they can find more of you and your resources.
So I have to say, I love being back. I loved our last conversation, loved this one, and I'm so grateful for this opportunity to share and connect with your audience. So first, they can take the quiz at loveafterbaby.com/quiz to see what area of their relationship might need the most attention, and we'll give them some resources to help them in that area. Follow me on Instagram at loveafterbaby to get tips and like see mom life and see how, we make it all work. And then I have different digital courses and offers that they can get through my link in bio. And for one-on-one work, they can apply at apply.loveafterbaby.com. So thanks again for having me. And I look forward to connecting with your listeners and supporting them in strengthening their relationships and navigating this beautiful, complex journey of love after baby.
Thank you so much for being a guest on our show today. And for our listeners, if you haven't left us a review, please do. Amy and I, we read every single one. And not only does it help us become better podcasters, but we love seeing your feedback. We love seeing the compliments. We love seeing the things that come in that are really hitting home. and it helps push our podcast out to more ears just like yours so we can get in front of more women who are trying to get better every single day. So thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you next week.